This is Studio Potter, the podcast.
The Last Mayo Potter, Juani Gomez, was first written by Samira Steinmeier and published on August 1st, 2024.
With the help of La Escuela Nacional de Cerámica, National School of Ceramics in Mexico, and their Programa de Hornos de Leña para el Mejoramiento de la Cerámica Mexicana, Wood Kiln Program for the Improvement of Mexican Ceramics, indigenous communities have been combining traditional practices with modern technology to revive and improve local pottery production. 26 smokeless wood kilns have been built in indigenous communities throughout Mexico over the past 7 years. The smokeless wood kilns were designed and developed by Japanese potter Masakazu Kusakabe, who helped communities build these kilns worldwide. In Mexico, the kilns have been built by indigenous community members under the guidance of engineer Yusuke Suzuki, an academic from La Escuela Nacional de Cerámica. For the remainder of the article, I will refer to La Escuela Nacional de Cerámica using the abbreviation ENC. Compared to traditional firing methods, having access to a smokeless wood kiln offers numerous benefits to communities, such as improved firing times, consumption of less wood, increased productivity and income for potters, and reduce safety hazards such as burns and the inhalation of harmful fumes. The studio of Yoreme potter Juani Gomez in the indigenous Mayo village of Masiaca, Sonora, is the next location in Mexico to hopefully receive a smokeless wood kiln. Juani is the last practicing Yoreme potter in her Mayo community, and she is committed to reviving the craft so that the tradition can persist for the benefit of future generations. A fundraiser to help pay for the construction of the smokeless wood kiln occurred at the beginning of 2024 and fell short of the goal. I became aware of this fundraiser through an Instagram story from the ENC shared by a fellow Tucson, Arizona potter. I was so excited to hear about this project that I immediately donated and then reached out to the ENC to see if I could arrange a visit with Juani to learn more about Mayo pottery. To explain why I was so eager to meet Juani, I need to back up a bit. When I was a child, my brother and I spent summers in Sonora with my nana while my single mom worked in Arizona. My nana had a wealth of stories about our Mexican family history, our ancestors, and lots of family ghost stories that she enthusiastically shared with us. In one story, she told me about her matrilineal grandfather, who was a member of the Mayo tribe. My nana's mother, my great-grandmother, left the Mayo community when she married a Mexican military man, my great-grandfather, and moved away. My nana was not brought up within the Mayo community or tradition, but she felt that it was important that I know about this distant part of my ancestral lineage. Being raised in Arizona and along the borderlands of Sonora, I was not exposed to Mayo culture. Mayo territory spans the southern part of Sonora to northern Sinaloa, and from the Sierra Madre Occidental to the east, to the Gulf of California. Mayo means people of the riverbank, referring to the Mayo River in southern Sonora. As an adult, I searched the internet to learn more, particularly about Mayo pottery tradition, because I'm a potter. What little information I found online regarding their pottery portrayed it as an artifact in a museum rather than a part of a thriving present-day practice. I always wondered if perhaps the pottery practice had declined or if it was gone altogether. When I saw the Instagram story from the ENC about the fundraiser for the last Mayo potter, my heart simultaneously sank and also was filled with a visceral jolt of excitement. Here was a potter who, if I was fortunate, might be willing to share knowledge that felt precious to me and that I had been unable to find. Speaking to Juani felt urgent, and I found my usually introverted self reaching out to strangers on social media to ask if it was possible to travel to Sonora to meet her. I was contacted by a representative from the ENC, a talented sculptor from Hermosillo by the name of Daniela Plasencia, who is friends with Juani. Daniela also had a similar jolt of eagerness to meet Juani 4 years ago. She told me that she drove 4 hours to Masiaca without actually knowing where Juani lived and asked around until she finally found her. They became fast friends and worked together regularly. Daniela conveyed my request to Juani, and we coordinated a visit for March 2024. My goal was to spend the day with Juani and to write an article sharing as much as she felt comfortable sharing with me and the Studio Potter community. One day is not quite enough, by the way, but it was all my schedule would allow. Ultimately, I wanted to create a little space on the internet where this article could be found by anyone who else might be searching for information about Mayo pottery, the very thing that I had been unable to find. What Juani is aiming to do in her community feels critically important. The ancestral pottery knowledge she holds is a gift. My husband, my 12-year-old daughter, my 15-year-old son, and my mom joined me on the 10-hour road trip south from Tucson, Arizona to Masiaca, Sonora. I invited my mom, Elena, to join me in visiting Juani because she also wanted to learn more about our Mayo ancestry. My mom is a ceramics instructor and potter from Agua Prieta, Sonora. She taught me how to make pottery. Also, sometimes when speaking Spanish, I will forget a particular word mid-sentence, and my mom is always down to help me articulate my thoughts in Espanol. My kids and husband stayed in the beautiful colonial town of Alamos, Sonora, where my husband was working remotely, while my mom and I drove about an hour southwest to Masiaca. I'll narrate my conversations with Juani rather than transcribe it all verbatim. Masiaca is a quiet rural desert village with mostly dirt roads and the intermittent sounds of roosters or a roaming ice cream truck. When we arrived at Juani's home and studio, she greeted us with a big warm smile. My mom and I met Juani's young daughter Angela and her teenage son Hector, and we were welcomed to tour her workspaces. Juani's pottery studio is divided between an indoor and outdoor space. The indoor room is connected to her home and has ample storage shelves filled with greenware, finished work, and a counter for working on pieces. Outdoors is a wooden ramada with a kick wheel built by Juani's husband, Juan Pablo, a workspace and assorted ceramic tools and materials. Adjacent to the ramada is an area used to process local clays, and a bit further is a shallow depression in the ground for firing. The Mayo style of firing is fuego directo, which entails placing pots on a grill that is propped on bricks that are placed on the ground. The pots are covered with large shards of broken pottery, then cow dung and choya cactus wood, and then ignited. I asked if there is a physical indication of when the pots are finished firing, and Juani tells me that los de antes, or those from before, or Mayo ancestors, stoked the flames, and from ancestral wisdom gained after trial and error, they just knew when the pots were done firing. Juani shows me a metal trough filled with water and unprocessed clay that is aging, and an adjacent bucket with clay that has already been sieved through a fine mesh. Pebbles are used to scrape and push the clay through the sieve. Then the clay slip is left to settle in preparation to be filtered through the fabric. She skims water from the surface of the slip and then begins to scoop the slip into a box draped with fabric. While she processes her clay, she explains that she uses a blend of two local clays, a red and a black clay. The black clay alone is brittle, but with the addition of the sandier red clay, it becomes a more durable clay body. She says that she recently learned how to test for calcium carbonate in her clay by adding vinegar to see if it bubbles. Calcium in clay causes unwanted pits in pots when fired. Fortunately, her local clays have no calcium. The fabric is filled with clay slip and will begin to filter out moisture until it is just the right consistency for building pottery. She mentions that studio tasks, such as processing clay or burnishing pieces, are completed during the new moon. Beginning new pieces, however, was to be avoided during the new moon. For Mayo ancestors, the moon was central in determining the timing for many activities, such as when to dye fabrics, plant crops, or cut wood for buildings. Around the full moon is when Juani makes her pottery, extracts clay from the ground, and fires work. Firing is done outdoors in the evening or night under a full moon. The Mayo believe that the water content of natural materials is reduced around the new moon, but increases as the moon waxes. It is believed that the work has the best chance of turning out well if a potter's production cycle follows the lunar phases. Before firing, Juani's grandparents and ancestors would cook beans over a fire and make small balls of clay to toss into the fire. These balls of clay were an offering to the moon and to La Madre Tierra, Mother Earth, to ensure a successful firing. When digging clay, Mayo potters first ask for permission from La Madre Tierra. We head to the indoor portion of her studio, and she shows me a well-worn, puck-shaped rock called a piedra fina that her abuelita used to use to shape and burnish her pottery. Juani recalls her grandmother's beautiful, wrinkled, arthritic hands making comales or ollas for everyday use in their home. Her name was Tomasita Piña, and Juani recalls childhood memories of making little cups or plates next to her while she worked. The last professional potter in the Mayo community was Doña Bebaña Valencia. Juani's time learning from Doña Bebaña was limited. Several pieces of Doña Bebaña's pottery were acquired by the Arizona State Museum for their permanent collection of indigenous pottery. Juani didn't pursue pottery until 8 years ago, after having children and reflecting on her life about how she would like to realign and move forward. My mom, Juani, and I all reflect on the allure and satisfaction of working with clay as a way to find balance while raising children. Juani places several pieces she's making on her work counter, and my mom notices how lovely a photo of Juani and her work would be. I agree and place the piedra fina next to the pots as I prepare to take a picture. Juani asks if she should cover the surface of her work counter so that it doesn't show how messy it is. I remind her that the readers of this article will be potters, and I joke that if things look too clean and tidy in her studio, they might be suspicious. We all know how messy art making can actually be. I asked Juani what the difference is between the words Yoreme and Mayo, which I've heard used seemingly interchangeably in reference to members of the tribe. She explains that Mayo refers to the tribe as a whole, and Yoreme is the individual from the tribe. I asked if she would describe ancient Mayo pottery for me. Juani says that los de antes, her ancestors, would dig the clay, soak it, and remove the obvious rocks, but wouldn't use a sieve to separate out the finer clay powder. A local straw called saitia was wedged into the clay to help compact it. Saitia is found adjacent to ant mounds, the fibers tossed out by ants after they've eaten the seeds. The saitia would burn out of the pots during firing, leaving little cavities. The finished pieces had a more sandy texture and were covered with clay slips so that the rocks were less noticeable. The pieces were not polished. This style was very rustic and was called saruki. Juani says that she's reducing the amount of saitia that she adds to her clay blend because she doesn't think it's as necessary. She's maintaining the traditional ways of working with clay while modifying her practices to accommodate what she's learning through experience while attending ENC workshops and after trading tips with the potters she meets. Mayo pots typically had no decorations and were primarily utilitarian, used to gather and store everyday necessities such as seeds or water. People would sometimes store money in pots and bury them, much like savings accounts in a bank. Juani says that gold coins have been found in buried clay pots in her community. Mayo pots have been found at ancient ruin sites that were well made and with thin walls. Ancient Mayo pottery found in Huatabampo, Sonora, indicates that they have inhabited pre-Columbian Mexico since around 200 CE. Her ancestors were skilled potters. Each piece was used until it was no longer functional. Then it was replicated. more pieces were always being produced. Juani is currently working on making large jugs for atole, which is an ancient Mesoamerican hot beverage made with corn masa, or with pinole in northern Mexico. Also water, piloncillo, which is an unrefined cane sugar, cinnamon, and vanilla. It's a favorite winter drink in my household. She is also making tinajas, large water jugs, and toritos, which are sculpted bulls with plates on their backs that are used in traditional fiestas. In addition to working with clay, Juani is a painter, and she incorporates painting and other decorative elements into her pottery to express what inspires her. She finds inspiration from her surrounding landscapes, flora and fauna, traditional customs, and cultural symbols such as the Pascola mask or the deer dancer. She shows me a cup she's working on, and it's decorated with a cactus. This is absolutely delightful to me because cacti appear regularly on my pottery, reflecting the Sonoran Desert where I'm from. Juani says that she likes to capture the landscape as it is now, knowing that in the future it will look different. Symbols taken from ancient Mayo petroglyphs found near Navojoa and Caborca are also featured on Juani's pottery. One symbol she depicts is la manita, or the hand of the maker. Another is the labyrinth, which indicates the path or the way to arrive at a destination. The tortuguita, or turtle, and venado, deer, also appear in petroglyphs and in her work. Mayo culture has strong ties to the natural world, and animals are represented throughout. Tenebaris, which are cuatro espejos butterfly cocoons, or Rothschildia cincta, are worn around the ankles of traditional dancers and rattle to represent the sound of a rattlesnake. The Pascola dancers wear a black sash that runs from their knees to their waist, representing the babatuku, which is a local black snake. Pascola dancers also wear a belt tied around their waists that represent the fox. Juani told me that los de antes paid close attention to particular animal behaviors, as they would be interpreted as cautionary signs. For example, if a snake was found in a tree by a waterway, it was a sign that the water level would rise to that height during a storm. Coyotes lingering and howling near a village were interpreted as a sign that they were afraid of something and were warning the Mayo to be alert. As Juani demonstrates painting Mayo symbols on a pot with white and red slip, she pauses to ask my mom if we like the smell of clay, to which there's a resounding yes, and a discussion of various aromas we have identified with certain clays, or the lack of aroma in some clays. We can all relate to sticking our nose into pots when they're still moist to partake in a big, delicious sniff. Juani says her clay smells exquisite, like moist soil after rain. She passes a pot to us that she made using her black clay, and we all take turns smelling it. My mom says it smells woody, like mesquite. Juani says it smells like plant roots and mentions that it comes from a nearby dam, so the water settles and sits over time in contact with the roots of many trees. I tell her that a particular local desert clay that I've been working with smells faintly sweet, like honey. We sound like clay sommeliers and wonder together about all the subtle ways that particular minerals and organic matter in a location may contribute to the scent of each clay. We discuss the use of glazes, which are not applied to traditional Mayo pottery. Juani says that she's open to glazing her pots and is curious about specific ingredients as well as how colors are achieved. I share what I've learned from my experience mixing and developing my own glazes, as well as the knowledge I've acquired from glaze chemistry courses. I share with her that essential glaze ingredients such as quartz, feldspar, and calcium carbonate could likely be identified and gathered from her surrounding landscape, or purchased, of course, which is more convenient. We compare notes about firing temperatures, over-firing clays, new tools we're using, and testing our materials. We pass around another clay pot so we can smell it. And then Juani offers to give me some of her clay to try out at home. I feel really lucky. She plans to take us to several nearby locations where she gathers clay. We're waiting for Daniela to arrive from Hermosillo before heading there with her. I ask Juani how modernity is influencing Mayo pottery practices. She says it brings with it new techniques and methods of decorating pots that she considers improvements. She says that she feels free to make more than traditional rustic and utilitarian ollas and comales. Juani is exploring decorative techniques that align with her personal creative style, such as painting and carving. She's happy that others are interested in her work, but traditional ways of making pottery are still important, and modernity shouldn't change that. Los de antes knew how to fire things perfectly. They used no thermometer. They knew when it had reached maturity and when to stop adding fuel to the fire, and their knowledge was very important. But Juani is excited to hopefully have a smokeless wood kiln built for the community to use. She says that traditional firing can be challenging and it's discouraging when potters lose work. Students and potters will be more inclined to persevere if the success rate is improved. The wood kiln would be able to fire pieces to a more precise temperature. I inquire about why she thinks there has been such a decline in pottery making in her community. Juani says that recent generations have lost interest in continuing the tradition. Many prefer to leave their communities to find work or study in larger cities. Materials such as plastic are more commonly used by newer generations due to their costs and availability. She says that people ask, why is pottery so expensive if it's just dirt? They don't realize that not just anyone can make a cup or plate with clay. Most people don't consider the wisdom, knowledge, and labor required to make a piece. Juani is currently offering 2 pottery classes for children in the Mayo community and has a total of 60 students, as well as 20 women who are learning from her also. I ask if she's finding students in her classes who appear to have a strong desire to become potters. She says that there are several people who are very interested, especially with the prospect of being able to use the new smokeless wood-burning kiln because it would improve production and the firings. She's putting out the call to her community to make beautiful pieces to use at home and also to sell. Juani believes strongly that this will become a reality and that the kiln will be built. She says it's sensational to feel her hands full of clay. It feels like a caress. Juani loves to see students forming something from the earth, firing it, and then the feeling they get when they see what they've made with their own hands. They love that feeling. Daniela arrives and we take a moment to chat. She's a former student at the ENC and along with her partner, Ana Celia Ferraris, she worked with the Mayo community for 9 months. I feel like another entire article could be dedicated to the work that they and the ENC have embarked on. We all head out to visit 3 nearby clay deposits on Mayo land. The first is a pit in the desert where Juani digs her red clay. I ask her how she usually finds clay deposits, and she says that her father will let her know if he notices anything promising while he's working in the fields. Also, if she sees a change in soil color, such as this particular spot with a more iron red color, it can mean that there might be clay beneath. Close by, she points out a fresh pile of cythia on the ground next to an anthill, just as she had described in earlier conversations. Next, we drive to a large open field with darker, crumbly soil. This is where Juani gathers her black clay and the dam she mentioned earlier in the day. Daniela begins to dig and fills a bucket with clay. We take a few photos of Juani holding 2 pots she made, both decorated with horsehair and one with a sculpted Pascola mask. We then proceed to the last deposit, a pit with white clay that is typically applied to wood roofs to protect them from rain. Juani was curious about whether this white clay might be useful in her studio, so she tested it, and it works well as a slip. We head back to Juani's neighborhood and briefly visit her father's studio to see his work. Hector Francisco Gámez Piña is well known for the Pascola masks he makes. They are used in local fiestas, but also included in collections such as those of the Arizona State Museum. As an artisan, he is multi-talented and also works with leather and wood. We decide to have a meal before my mom and I head back to Alamos for the night. Juani takes us to Cocina Tradicional Turim, a small outdoor restaurant in Masiaca with tables under wooden ramadas decorated with papel picado and a colorful mural painted by Juani herself. On the menu is wakawaki, which is a mayo iñaki soup made with pork or beef and a variety of veggies such as corn, cabbage, carrots, and garbanzo beans. They also offer one of my favorite childhood soups, gallina pinta, which is basically the same as pozole, but with the addition of pinto beans. While we eat, I ask Juani if there's anything else she'd like to share with me. Juani says that creative talent already exists in Masiaka. She wants her community to believe in their talents. She believes that she can revive Mayo pottery. Reviving and continuing the pottery tradition can benefit the community economically. If they begin to see the financial benefit, maybe future generations will believe that they can earn a living by continuing their pottery tradition. La Escuela Nacional de Cerámica is helping make this a reality with their smokeless wood kiln building program and by offering community workshops for indigenous communities on how to meet the demands of running a modern-day small pottery business. Daniela, Ana Celia, and the ENC have been critical in supporting this goal by helping to fill the gaps in traditional pottery-making knowledge, not only to revive pottery practices, but also to update technical knowledge to improve the quality of pieces and decrease health hazards. I believe this goal is within reach. I imagine a beautiful, well-equipped Mayo community studio space with a brand new smokeless wood kiln and potters eagerly waiting to meet their freshly wood-fired pieces. I picture Juani leading the holistic ceramic classes she has described to me, where students can locate, dig, process, shape, and decorate their local clay, then participate in firing and finishing their pieces all in one class. This sounds like an absolute dream class to me. I hope to someday return to Masiaka to attend a workshop with Juani in the near future.
Studio Potter is a small nonprofit. Please consider becoming a partner in underwriting or making a personal donation to Studio Potter. Your support can make a significant difference in helping us continue to produce high-quality, engaging content for our podcast. By donating, you enable us to bring in more voices, enhance our production, and expand our reach to a broader audience. Every contribution, no matter the size, directly impacts our ability to keep delivering the clay stories and discussions you love. Head to studiopotter.org and click on donate.